Have you sent anything around?
Not really, no. I have enough on my manuscript, I think, but I have to put it together and make decisions and stuff.
I gotta get scooting.
Okay.
Nice to meet you guys.
You too.
You're Paul then?
Yeah.
Dennis.
Nice to meet you, Dennis.
Nice to meet you.
This is Nancy.
Very nice to meet you. You guys have a great time here tonight, and cultural well.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis.
Thanks for coming. Yeah, you're welcome. You know, just wrap it up, throw it by.
Is this good?
What's that? Yeah, it's all right. It's got 4 hours and 27 minutes.
Oh, my God.
That should be.
It's not going. Feel free to speak freely about me when I leave.
Bye, Dee.
Have a good one, guys.
So did you tell your friends who you were?
No.
I sent it out to the email list.
No, I didn't send it.
It's hard. This is like our first 7 o'clock.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What time are they usually?
4:30.
Oh.
Yeah, but in the summer we changed because we're normally outside.
I was surprised that it was in session. I wasn't sure it was in session.
It's summer session.
Yeah. How long have you been a librarian?
Oh, since 2004.
Did you get a job right at?
I've been working in libraries since 2002.
Did you get a job here right out of graduate school?
Pretty much.
How'd you do that? Because you were already
there. Because I worked in libraries. I worked at the health science library. I worked at... And now I'm in academics, you know, really.
Do you know... I can't think of her name. She's a head of... I think she's a charge of the interlibrary loan at UB Health Sciences.
Oh.
We've been doing field trips over there because we're going up with Iliad.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Library loan system.
Uh-huh.
So they're helping us. Hi!
Hi!
It's our friends and mine.
Oh, good. You did tell some people.
I did. I'm so glad you came. Christy, you found it.
Yes. We had to ask the police.
Oh my God, what a place.
No, it's wonderful.
I think we're parked over there.
We found a beautiful spot. Yeah. It's right down there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I called.
Hi,
okay.
Thanks for coming.
Okay, yeah.
I said, let's have extra time because we might get lost.
Yeah, we got here early, too.
We did, too.
Yeah, last
very
time
informal.
I parked way far away, but this time we parked right on here.
So can we go out this way when we go home, or we have to go this way?
Yeah, you can go out that way. Yeah.
Everything is locked.
Right there.
You have to go
what did the sign say?
Oh, we have to go that side, yes, and then you walk around the
corner.
Yeah, what did the sign say?
See, that's so nice.
And then what did it say? Then student parking.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. If they give you a ticket, we'll pay for your ticket.
Why would they do
that?
Because they're real strict around here like that.
And the guest parking is actually behind Rockwell Hall.
Oh, a ticket? I thought a ticket to come here.
No.
So we're paying, right?
No.
We're not supposed to park?
No, it's only for staff.
And
where should we park?
It's only for students. Way behind Rockwell Hall is the guest parking right there in that X lot.
That was almost full, too.
It was.
Well,
he told
us to go to parking lot W.
Oh, we did? And he said it was not going to park in there?
Well, I don't know.
It just said W.
Usually, I tell people to just park behind Albright and walk over in the summer because that's what most people do.
Oh, the Arc Yale.
Yeah.
We were going to be outside tonight, but one of the attendees can't go out on the roof because he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
You want to move it?
They read in the summer on the rooftop. That's why it's called the rooftop poetry series. I don't know where the rooftop
is. It's on the second floor. When you walk down, you'll see it to the right. It's like an indoor garden.
Yeah,
it's very nice right now.
We're fixing
it up.
Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
This is what?
Lisa.
Lisa.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
You want to move the car?
No. We'll pay. If you get a ticket, I'll pay for it. Because it was nice
to we parked over there, too, so if you get one,
we can blame it on ignorance.
It don't count. Believe me. Not here. They won't take this.
This
is my friend Christine, who's a librarian out there.
Oh, cool.
This is her mom, Helga.
Yeah. Hi.
And this is her aunt, Aya, right? So she's... When we talked to her at the Christmas party, she was very interested in poetry.
Oh, so you write... You write? Do you write poetry?
I write letters to my kids.
Oh,
and grandkids. No poetry.
Oh, no poetry. Oh.
What do I do? I do rhyming, right?
Yeah.
Rhyming.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah.
But not anymore. In school, I used to.
You should do it again.
Yes, sure.
You're never too old. Lisa's the head of the rooftop poetry series.
Yeah. We're actually going way down. We've been going crazy. Once a week. We're going down once a month in the fall. This is our last big hurrah this summer. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. It's a lot of work.
That's busy. That is a lot of work.
Sometimes we have 50 people show up. So it's, you know.
How many?
50.
Wow.
It depends. Like, I think it'll be a little lower tonight. Because I don't think people are used to going out yet.
Summer.
I hope we get some. I know Kathy Yelvin is coming from the library because she's a humanities librarian. And she's going to be doing some poetry programming because she went to this big poetry workshop in New York City.
You know, I was telling somebody, actually, Kathy Gavin, actually, I got her name from somebody because I want to go around and read from my book.
Yes, she's looking, what I heard from her husband, Tim, who worked with me, and he also writes. I think what she's planning is the first programming series to do with, or whatever, with librarians as poets.
Oh, perfect.
So she's looking for librarians that write.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I forget her boss.
Elaine Barone.
Not Elaine. She's
Peggy Skatnicki
from the downtown branch. No, she's on Winnie Lurk with me.
Peggy Skatnicki.
Not Peggy.
No.
No.
Carol Batt.
Oh, Carol Batt.
Yeah, Carol Batt's not our boss.
Oh,
she's in charge of support services.
Okay. Well, Carol Batt is in Winnie Lurk with me, and she actually I told her about the book, and so she forwarded my information to.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
maybe
so
the library should buy it then.
So, I mean, she says she wants
good,
to.
Good.
So, but now that it's out, I don't know if you can pass the word on to somebody.
I'll tell her.
No.
Well, she'll be here tonight.
Okay, so.
Yeah,
okay, sure.
Said she was coming tonight.
Great, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And then Winnie Lurk has been so supportive, too. Everyone on the committee's like, oh, come read at my library. We'll buy the book. You know, everyone.
Yeah.
Like, we'll buy the library.
Yeah.
So it's good being a librarian having a book out.
Well, I did a poetry workshop, poetry reading when I was at Branch Manager Kenmore several years ago, and it was very smallly attended, sparsely. And Amy Christman, another librarian, one of the featured poets, and then it was open poetry. And we did have maybe five people come.
Hey,
you know?
For poetry? That's not bad.
I know.
And actually, my friend Forrest Roth has been running a series for Madai, and he's been getting, like, you know, money to bring people in. He'll have, like, two or three people show up, including, like, another faculty member, you know, who's hoping to run a series. So I feel like if you have 10 or 12, that's
you're
very successful.
Good,
yeah.
Yeah.
If you have 50, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So it just depends what.
Yeah. In the library world, when we do general programming, if we get 45 people signed up, we usually get about 30 attendants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, although they did do Art Spiegelman last week at the Central Library, they had him come, the graphic novelist.
Oh, cool.
They had a really good attendance.
Oh, I'm sure.
We were out of town, so we didn't get to see him.
Yeah, they filled the auditorium pretty much.
Yeah. So, Paul, have you been doing other readings? Anybody else?
Not lately. I mean, I do Center for Inquiry. I've done, you know, just Buffalo Open readings a number of times, but not much more than that, really.
Yeah, I did Center for Inquiry with Jim Kim.
Yeah, that was just a little while ago.
Yeah. It was like a month ago. He's going to Sarah Lawrence in June for another poetry workshop.
Studying with Stuart Deschelle.
Uh-huh. You are?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I went to
Palm Beach Poetry Festival and did a workshop with Thomas Lux, and he invited me to come to Sarah Lawrence.
Awesome.
So I came to Sarah Lawrence, and he thought Stuart Deschelle would be good for me. So
That's how I got into the contest, actually, because I went to Europa to the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Writers for just a summer program, and I took a class from this woman, but I booked it to another boyfriend of mine recommended, and we've been friends ever since. And she wrote a blurb about my book, and I had no idea that 6 years ago, that 6 years later, we'd still be in touch.
Yeah.
She was just here for Rooftop, and that's one that brought in 50 people. So that was when she stayed at my house, we went out for dinner, and you know, it was
that's
so fun.
Nice.
Yeah, her and Jonathan Skinner. It's nice. Hey, Ian, how are you? This is Paul.
Hi,
how are
you?
Reading
tonight.
Hopefully more people show up. And Nancy. So have you seen anyone else down there?
Oh.
Where is everybody?
The other poetry.
And I hope he remembers. Yeah, who do you think? I hope he's not on the rooftop waiting for us. I actually
have a double check. You need to get by there?
Are you a student?
Well, be quick, son. I'm glad you guys came too.
There's like too many people coming.
No, I've done
for this. For this.
For this group, yeah.
He's been at a couple different places.
Just Buffalo.
You know, I went on the computer maybe to get a map because I had no idea where it is. And I found the light up about you.
Where do you want us to sit?
Wherever
you want.
Okay. Where will you want?
He's gonna be reading up there, so you're gonna want to sit.
How about those here?
You said
them.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's
I had to sit.
Busy.
Huh?
Yeah.
Is this fine?
Yeah.
You write poetry?
Yeah. 16?
No, 10.
Oh, 10.
Like
send
you. No, Blaze Box 16 on the website. 10 for me.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes, sign that.
Oh, like that.
Well, it is a beautiful cover.
You did your job.
Is this sort of like the whole canvas, or is it?
Hello. All right, well, thanks everybody for coming, and I thought it might rain tonight, so it's probably good we're here anyway. Got some new faces in the crowd. I'm Lisa Forrest, and I run this series, been running it now for, 3 years. Yeah, it's a long time. We're going to start tonight. We have Paul White and Ed Taylor here, so very excited about this. So I'll just introduce Paul first, and then Ed will come on afterwards. Paul White works as a registered nurse. He has worked in elder care and pediatric home care for over 12 years. Previously, he worked as a computer tech and a deli manager. Wow. He has made writing a daily practice for over 20 years, and he is an avid book collector and reader in contemporary American poetry and ancient religious texts and translation. He has had poetry published locally in Art Voice and the Buffalo News many times. He's married to Nancy Mueller, who is a librarian, yes, for Buffalo and Erie County Public Library. And they have no children, but they own two cats.
Right.
Named?
Wally and Beaver.
Wally and Beaver. All right, so please welcome Paul White.
I want to thank Lisa for asking me to read, and thank you all for being here tonight to hear Ed and me read some of our work. This first poem draws its inspiration from off of LaSalle Park. You can see a stone building out on Lake Erie, way out on the lake, driving along the 190 one day, I saw that and started to imagine that building. So, this is called Intake Crib Lighthouse, 1920. I want to be the man who lives in the water intake on Lake Erie. It's a fine, round, stone edifice with a circular red steel roof. It's almost 100 years old, surrounded by water and sky. I'd have to have a motorboat to get groceries on Tuesdays. Inside my house, there is a hole where water pours in forever. A waterfall coils down in darkness and knows no end to washing the inner depths of my abode. My history, my name, everything, a smooth and sleek pathway. Everyone would know of the hermit who lives in the circular stone house, standing alone out on the lake. His home provides water for everyone in the city to drink. I want to be that man. Zebra muscles grow on his chin. This poem is inspired by the work of Vincent van Gogh. Self-portrait with bandaged ear. Oh, my mad brother, you saw the seams between all things like a skin on eternity. You saw all life as an explosion of motion uncontained by any body. Oh, my mad brother, the world broke apart before your eyes, and you tried mightily to bring it all back together again by painting, to catch the rush of a river vision which breaks us apart as all things are broken and carried. Now your sharp-angled coat is so tautly drawn, you overcome the weight of the world to put it on. You are the man who saw and knew. Oh, my mad brother, give me your ear. Um, This one is called An Adolescent Winter. It took a long time for Dr. Cohen to get me talking. When he finally did, it was a torrent broken out from winter. It began clear as ice, then it churned full of mud. One day, I was first on the couch after lunch. He fell asleep in his chair, and I kept talking. His head nodded as my hour ticked past. Does the earth hear the pull of its trees? Even asleep, he was a better listener than I had known. He roused again like an animal from hibernation, and I smiled. It was a smile people who loved me thought they might never see again, when I had seemed so frozen and dead. Place from which I came. It has taken me so long to finish the past, to wrap it up in blank brown paper, to tie it with twine and send it to a foreign country where my family lives. As witnesses of the little boy I was, they need to hear the novel of the man I have become. Another story that misses the point because the root is too deep and holds 100 lifetimes. This place from which we come. Call it a revisionist history if you must. We save ourselves. It's a story I can live with now. I have no children of my own to wound and to love into being by effort of my human frailty. This poem is about a book that I lost. And I lost it for a long time and forgot about it. And then one day I found it again. The Flood, after A.R. Ammons. A flood washed in and circled around our cellar, suspending boxes in crooked flotillas, soggy memory markers. At the bottom of this new muck was a book of poems glowing whitely, even as its pages were still stuck together like undercooked spaghetti. Seated in mud, I decided to read this lost, forgotten book, carefully peeling each page to make words out, letter by black blotted letter. The images rose up and stirred around in my subconscious as I carted my ugly past out into the sunlight. I attended a poetry festival at Palm Beach and took a workshop with Thomas Lux, and it was amazing. He was just a fount of information, and it's also difficult. But this is about that. The Ticket Taker at the Palm Beach Poetry Festival. 1. I hurried out the back of the auditorium before the program was over. Crowds put the fear in me up to my eyes. I never want to talk to anyone. As I sped down the hallway, the speaker system still echoed through the building. Poets thanking poets, deep and genuine. I turned to listen, heartsick. A floor-to-ceiling mirror caught me running. 2. A circle of luminaries stood inside the doorway. One of them looked out into the daylight. He had to step aside so I could enter. Then, like a pinball, I sped between the rest of them. In my sparrow's flight, thoughts swim, then drown as a cold anxiety rises. But the ticket taker, dear woman, looked up from under her old crooked head, and with a sharp, wry eye, she said, "It's an obstacle course getting in here, isn't it?" My dumb heart jumped in its cage. I had a lot of trouble in my youth. It was a hard time for me, and I got a lot of help. So somewhere along in my life, I decided I wanted to help other people, and I became a registered nurse. And I love my job as a nurse, and I would recommend it to anyone who wants to be a nurse. There's a lot of jobs available, and it's good work. This is called Feet to the Ground. They tell me about another child, and I'm scared. He's purple, scrawny, and weighs less than our 8-month-old kittens. He has no protective fur and no well-informed intent for anything but to suck or sleep. And this damned machine, no matter how well-intentioned, it jars with its alarms, its perfectly measured blasts and hisses of air. The blue tubing is ungodly. Oh, why should I cradle his life in my techno fingers, my brutal meat grabbers? I'm afraid I'll tear him just by being nearby with my big body. How can I wake up such a depth of care again and not be hurt? How can I not be afraid, listening for each new inspiration of this small child? His weight is so slight, I need to be like a cloud just to hold on to him, to bring him down to earth and help him grow his feet to the ground. This is a poem about something that happened when I was a little boy. My grandfather's voice. If my grandfather spoke, it was so quiet I could not hear it. So I believe he never said anything. Only air came out of his mouth. No voice, no thrum. And when his emphysema slowly clenched its hands around his lungs, he had to make the long trip down the hallway to the bathroom, like a tunnel, a journey, a great African safari. He breathed at breakneck speed to save his life. His oxygen tank swung, walked one small step at a time as he leaned on his walker. The floorboards in that old house creaked so loudly, like a shotgun blast or ice cracking underfoot. It was so cold in that water for such a small boy. My grandfather, desperate, red-faced and stricken, my eyes were frozen by fear. I worked in a nursing home for many years with Alzheimer's patients, this is about that. Rest home for writers. Short Rita scribbles in fantastical script, blocked together paragraphs of neatly done gibberish. She yearns into my eyes a message for the gods, Rita with the nervous giggle and the stiff shuffling gait. And Lucian's books about his years spent in Africa are right next to notebooks of indecipherable meanderings. Like a Chinese ideogram, Lucian became twisted. We lift him with a Hoyer into his chair every day. To quiet their wild eyes, I talk to these writers as I tuck them to bed. When I wash and dress their flaccid skin, I tell them stories about nothing. I rustle their architecture as they grunt and coo. Now, on a lighter note, this poem is about Mr. Rogers from the show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I think they still show reruns on Channel 17. And he died recently within the last few years. I cultivate a childlike simplicity which really pisses off my neighbors. That anyone could be so daft is not a problem they want to consider. I have no desire to be duplicitous. I'm actually trying to be as simple as I can manage. When someone mentions the weather in passing, I ask them to explain it. How big it is and where it comes from. Of what is it made? How does it make you feel? What I really mean is, when the weather happens, what happens inside my body, my skin, my eyes, and my ears? What are they for in regard to this weather? Does weather ever get inside my body by any other means than these rudimentary electrical impulses? What if we open our mouths and let some rain in? How does that feel? And where exactly am I located? Am I in between the sinews and bones? Or am I on a small blue planet going around a ball of fire in a minor galaxy? Will you be my neighbor? Won't you please, please, won't you be my neighbor? This poem is called Long Feelers. I spin the globe with my fingertips and try to explain to my kid where we live. We go around like this, I say. It's kind of confusing. I leave my prints on the Indian Ocean. Then I stop the world for my kid. I point to a black dot. This is the city of Buffalo, New York. We live in this black dot here. And do you remember when we fished in the Niagara River? He looks at me quizzically, trying to grasp it all. Do the fish with long feelers live in this blue line next to this black dot on the big spinning ball? My kid is so smart. You got it, I say. We are alive by a tenuous construction of breath. It spins imagination deep in the black dots of our eyes, I say. You, your mother, and I, we hold each other tight in the sway of days. He smiles to give the world a spin. He leaves his prints on my eyes. I have a writing chair at home where I do most of my writing, and next to it are all my bookshelves. And over the years, I've collected a lot of things that end up on my bookshelves. So this is a list poem of things on my bookshelves. A gargoyle resting, chin in hand, one wing chipped. A dead, dried-out, coiled snake, which used to have mites crawling in and out its eyes, but now they are gone, done with what mites do. A picture of my wife at 35, and another one at age 10, both in the same frame. A small silver statue of an angelic Mother Mary holding a red heart. A laughing Buddha, arms upraised to lift the world. Another Buddha, fat and seated, jocular and jiggling. An empty watch battery, a bottle of prescription pills, and 28 mechanical pencils from Bell Telephone. 1,213 volumes of poetry. My grandmother's baby shoes bronzed as bookends. This poem is about that place that's near to dream in us, when you're just about to fall asleep and you have all these images that pop through your head before you fall asleep. This is a poem about that. It's called Net of Words. I don't know what it was, but I made it into a word. A piece of weather stretched on the couch, gone by like a nap. A bird made of light flew through my ears, left a curlicue of dust at the tip of my pencil. I thought I caught a fish, but when I pulled my net, it was only full of water. Patience and faith to catch a fish, but if you get good, one might kiss you right on the nose. Poems come out of the air to land on your shoulders. This is a poem I wrote for my workshop in Florida. Beatrice. Beatrice fills a blue bird bath each day of glimmer and cloud. She keeps a piece of the sky for wings to twitch and splash. They flit, they chirrup, they fly to primp in a bowl full of gems. Beatrice rises each morning. She brims in golden pajamas. When I was a boy, I used to like to wander in the fields and look for snakes and frogs and insects of all kinds, and I guess this kind of has its inspiration in that kind of activity. Wafer for a worm tongue. Someone lifted up the rock. We are moist against the sky. Our dark tunnels no longer provide a place apart. We are full of fear and free. The air astringent against our skin. The sun a needle. The pavement a hot plate. Come, all souls, and be known. Stretch out your tongues to nothingness and be alive. The word. I want a word I can say whenever I need it in my silent head. A word to untangle the knot of me, the knot I keep pulling tighter. If I say such a word over and over, will it be more or less effective? Once would be enough for a powerful word. But I am weak, and I need to hear it resonate in the chambers of my death to root out dissension and call me. Was there ever such a word sounded in my silent head? This poem is about a walk in the forest. Bread knife. When sunlight cuts the limbed canopy of leaves like a serrated bread knife down to the forest floor, it scatters crumbs of old worn-out thoughts along the woodland path. I stop to meditate. This is what it will look like inside my eye if I ever get out of my own way. And darkness is the ground from which I bloom, a place to sit upon the sky. And this is one of those poems, I don't know if you've ever written a poem that you say to yourself after you've written it, I say, what the hell is that? Where did that come from? So I'm learning to start to trust the creative process and let those things come out. So this is called The Electric Octopus. Will someone please pull this electric octopus out of my chest? It touches everyone and makes my hair stand on end. After many years of this, my hair became so brittle it all fell out. Everyone touches me. I am running low on energy. I touch everyone. I am exhausted by the ferocity of the charge which runs through us. It says, "Be God," and then the power shoots out my fingertips. I am so frazzled I can't handle it. Someone, please pull this electric octopus out of my chest. Leave my heart oozing on the dock like a many-armed mud. Thank you.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Thank you. That was very lovely. It's neat. Very talented. And Bob Pohl actually gave me your name. You knew that, right? Bob Pohl's an advocate.
Yeah.
Yes. He's a good guy. All right, so Ed is next. Ed Taylor is the author of the eChat book, Rubaiyat of Hazmat. And his fiction and poetry have most recently appeared in the anthology PPFF. And I should mention, too, that that chat book is from Blazebox. New Writing UK, Nth Position, that's from the UK, Jacket, Australia, he's all over, Southwest Review, XCP, Cross Cultural Poetics, and a ton more. I'll let you look at him. There's too many to list off here. He is the recipient of a Virginia Commission on the Arts Fellowship and a Constant B. Southeastern Foundation Fellowship. His fiction has been featured on Fiction in Shorts, a program of the Rochester, New York National Public Radio affiliate, WXXXIFM. So please welcome Ed Taylor.
Thanks for coming out. That was great. That was a real treat. So I'm a little reluctant to follow, but I'm going to read a short piece of prose and a couple of poems. And this is the prose. I'll read that first. This is called We Are Stardust. Emily balked, frowning. Arms locked across her chest, compact as a spaniel's. Daddy, I'm tired of that book. She was difficult, mercurial, like the 80s-era Gaddafi, Peter thought, his knees almost at his chest, sitting on the edge of Emily's small bed, and his back beginning. Emily, brightly, that there's an awful shirt you're wearing. We had that word today in GT, and we have to use it in a sentence at home. Spell. O-F-F-A-L. That's not correct usage. Awful is a noun. Your shirt is awful. Better. Peter's day had stretched him thin as an eyelid. Senior partner in an artist management firm, he flickered with tiredness, falling across the finish line of Friday night. For an instant, he allowed himself release at the prospect of some unstructured time, but not too much to lose focus. Tomorrow was early squash. He tried to keep it low-key, using visualizations of the vegetable, round, orange, empty. The mind is like water. Leave it undisturbed and it will become clear on his Starbucks cup that morning. However, it was the club prelims for senior singles, and he could take it this time. He'd been working with a coach for the first time since Stanford 37 years ago. A bounce of Emily. I want a new story. Newest, latest, the bomb. Peter rubbed the apostrophe between his closed eyes, imagining the new, bigger flat panel and master and commander. But he promised his wife supersize me that night. Portia's stepdaughter's therapist assigned that as homework for next session, when they'd work on diet issues for commencement week. A dangerous time, warned the therapist. Peter rubbed more comfort in the mid-eyes spot. Then he stood and strode to the Gary rocking chair, in his tanned, dry hands, a warming martini in a water glass, and a thin book. He lowered himself and drank half. The room shivered, and he swallowed the rest, waved the book in his other hand like a racket, once, twice. Dad! Hello. She had that sitcom look, the sarcastic one, like his clients and his partners and the valet Parker and the server at lunch and the dermatologist and the dry cleaner and the Prius mechanic and the accountant and his last doubles partner and his first wife and Portia and God, probably, Peter decided, dropping the book. Fine. Here's a new story. Brand new. Fresh, most deaf. Peter stared into the blue cylinder of his glass, blurred and darkened at the bottom. In 1969, there was a huge concert called Woodstock. Many people came to the concert, so many that it was like a city. Dad, we studied Woodstock in Mrs. Willoughby's class last year. I already know about it. This isn't a story. Yes, it is. Anyway, all the people gathered out in the country in New York at a farm, as many people as a city, except it wasn't a city. There were no offices or parking garages or conservative Latino politicians. What? Ignore that last part. It was like a made-up city, but it was a beautiful city with no violence. No one tried to hurt anyone else. It was peaceful. All kinds of people were together just listening to music and enjoying being with each other, like a story, like an imaginary place, except it was real. Dad, I'm not... Let me tell it. Woodstock became a magic place. That's how magic happens. When enough people believing in the same thing come together, it can create magic. What about when we went to the Angels game? That wasn't magic, and everyone there, that's different. Not everybody there believed in the same things. Will you let me tell the story, please? All right? So it was like a city. People slept and ate together, and there was a kind of hospital where sick people went, and parts of it were like parks where people went and played, and there was this stage where there was music. Anywhere you went, you could hear music just floating over everything, like some big band, like some big hand, blessing everyone. But Dad, would you let me tell the freaking story, please? Would you let me tell the story, Emily? Would you please? The press conference is over. The president will take no more questions. So just like things happen in a real city, this imaginary city had a baby born, but just one baby. Out of this magic place, which only lasted for 3 days, a baby was produced. That's pretty magical in itself. Peter's face was warm. Right there in a field in the sun with the mother laughing and the father crying, and a circle of people singing and playing instruments and beating on drums. And after the baby was born, the parents took him through the crowd, holding him high over their heads, and everyone began cheering. And the cheer rose up like a wave sweeping through the crowd. Then the musicians on the stage found out and waved their arms, saying, "Come on up here, bring that baby up here." And the baby was smiling, and everyone was laughing. Some people were crying at this miracle, this child born in this fantastic city. And when they all came on stage, the crowd cheered so loudly that people far away heard the cheering and wondered what it was about in cities all around the world. People had never heard cheering like that. It was a new sound, like music. The farther it traveled from Woodstock, the more it sounded like music. Peter flicked his eyes at his watch, asked himself where he was going with this, thought about the real estate bubble and market corrections, then breasts, then something else. But it wasn't supposed to go on forever. It was just a concert. So after a little longer, the last musicians finished playing, and all the people began leaving, and Woodstock was over. But every person, when they left, wherever they went, they each took a little piece of that city. They each were a little magic city themselves in whatever place they were, even if they were by themselves. Okay, the end. That's it for now. Emily rolled over and raised one eyebrow, the pair barely bigger than parentheses. That's not a story. Nothing happens. Were you a hippie? Peter was surprised by the word, floating with nowhere to go. So he snorted and it vanished. Everybody was. Time to get some rest. He loped out, with her flinging bedclothes around like an angry maid as she settled, refusing to settle. Peter descended the footlit stairs. One of his clients performed at Woodstock, and reconfiguring that estate's tax position before a rights auction had eaten up too much of his week. Taking the final step into the white living room, he thought, as he did each time, too bright. He stopped and touched his empty, sweaty glass to a door-sized table, leaving a smeary moon. Then he wiped with a flat backhand and moved on. In his mind, table and vegetable. Poetry begins now. This is called Seeing Red. She is scowling, mouth tight, and I see red between her and him, a cloth stretched in air from her left to his right hand, him yanked by a small leashed dog in his other one. And I puzzle over this tug of war, why two adults walking a Maltese in the park grip a bright crimson scarf like a lifeline. Then I see her eyes, blind and open, in the sun as black cups, and I watch her pull and get nowhere. See the thing they have sag, then tighten like a soft blood-colored chain. And this is called Stephen Hawking in Zero G, and it's from a New York Times photograph. from last year, about 6 months ago. He floats sideways, fetal, and at his feet, an apple, tiny companion planet, as the dark matter of his eyes orbits, seeing Newton, humans, gravity, the past, in an equation equaling the stars toward which he falls, flying. This is called dream fragment. Morning or evening is steered by Ahab's burning earth in search of the white sail, and a confused foot alone in the sweaty cell of shoes, and how to wake when a grave tree steps away from the race, hoping for adoption by a gay couple of decades before swimming where there are no arms, only fish glittering like leaves as they sift toward the dark summer at the bottom of the heart. Does anyone here know Rosemary Cothey? This is called Pure Word for RK, and that is the person that I just mentioned, who is a local beloved figure in the poetry community here who died a couple of years ago. Pure Word for RK. Take a step back. The first word I'm going to speak is the word have, H-A-L-V-E. Have an orange. Inside, dynamite. Outside, white paper. There is decoration in the earth, eaten at edges, whole whales of physics and traffic. Deliver babies of softest vowel, sail loft, a hammock of cloud, condor, the world river of selfless green, glass hill, planet of hands, and always Florida. Butter, gears, weeds, speech. Then clotted potential, a wing torn, why it walks where it is going. The layers of cur on the bias, a cost of fur, cold spine. So plant a berry, the heart book. Berry, and now unsound. Hear no more the thyme, sage, rosemary. This is something similar to your electric octopus. And this is called My Amygdala. It is the finale of Harry Potter and Hope. Our century's over, so get in line. The bottom of the Fruit Loops bowl looks good now that bomb shelters burst with action items for eBay. Where to run when the finish rubs off? Every year, a sturgeon trying to fly dents a Floridian while the Gervonta pull Amazon dugouts and reach for even a dial-up connection, but catch only fish. Maybe Cameron Diaz can help. Teeth of DNA, ladder of DNA, treasure map of DNA, all end and begin in the egg on your plate. Sunnyside lost in sports talk until it walks on skinny fins from the eating and the world can't find its theory of mind. The scrambled lovey-dovey, evo-devo of choosing where to sit and why to waltz. When to fool that sum of the people. Who to groom and how to stay inside the tribe as outside is wild with stranger tigers. This is called civic duty. Take off coffee and lost lunch. Lady of Spain with a spaniel on this morning of many handles. You are Keats with a vengeance. 5 miles of hardtack and Russell Crowe's saber-toothed Oscar clout beats me to the punch. So I have to make amends, losing again. There's a hum in the world. Have to get that fixed. After rain, refuge shadows falling before they can stand. Brutal in here and outside. Oi, don't ask. If losing it is good as having it, why write? What is included in the fixed price? Here, paint faces off like duelists, and the hand points, but we bite the fingers. Yellow envelope, white page, bird in a rage, a tisket, a tasket, a Greek and smelly tragedy. To Mao, American brands were sugar-coated bullets, but little did he know the apple-smooth thighs of our groceries. "Hell is a hell of a place," says the captain, for whom you assume the position, "till further notice, and the voting for top rogue cop is over." Does anyone here play music, instrument? This is called Devil's Box for a Fiddler. "Some put inside it the rattle of serpent, to keep far the dark spirit its keening calls. A daughter may hear it, and loosen hair, turn cat, a wife. Them as play it, too full of story and winking and easy teeth, when they come, there is undoing, true as arrows from their bows." And this is called Anthology. This is the last one. Anthology. "All I see is poetry for days. The ice bridge over crevasse and the crevasse, the land and the map. Silver disclaimers invent porcelain and other crap, piles in the ditch with dead dogs, and here is poetry in the flesh and stone, the centuries of forbidden city risen in your heart until you cannot park. No room. On the street, everything halts so poems can cross. And the signal is poetry. And poetry behind every wheel, without insurance and on the phone, and whacking off and fiddling with music and eyeing the mirror and speeding and eating and crying and laughing and screaming because it is late and early and all this fucking traffic between it and where it needs to be." Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Did anybody else bring any work to share? I always open up the floor. Did you bring anything? A letter? Did you bring anything? No? Okay. Jerome's reading next week, so I hope you all can make it. Actually, with Marina, I can't pronounce her last name. Can you?
Blitzneva.
Yeah, that's it. Very good. Yeah. So hopefully you guys can make it. It'll be 7 o'clock, same time next Wednesday. So I guess that about wraps it up. Thank you. I'm glad everybody made it, and great job.